Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. Tab Douglas here till Arnesco Roofing Preview Show, getting you ready for tonight's game between the Bucks and the Marlins. Coming up at 4:45 and going out to the Fan Hotline. The Fan Hotline, by the way, brought to you by Armstrong Business Solutions. Our good friend Corey Geiger from the Altoona Mirror out there in Altoona, and also ESPN Radio in Altoona. Corey, always great to talk to you, and I think this would be perfect timing because we get a firsthand scouting report on 24-year-old Dario Agrizal. What can you tell us?
Hey, Tab, how's everything going? What I would tell you is he is inconsistent. He has really good upside. When you get him on a day where he's pitching well, he's really tough. You get him on a day he's not pitching well, you're going to pound him. So if that sounds familiar, I know that's probably the MO for a lot of Pirates pitchers. But here's a stat for you, Tab, and this is kind of hard to believe for a guy, you know, a pretty good pitching prospect who's getting to the big league. In his minor league career, Tab, he's allowed more hits than innings pitched. That's hard to do.
Yeah, it's not. It's also not good.
Well, but I'll counter it by saying he's got good control. He's got about a 4.5 to 1, 4.5 to 1 strikeout to walk ratio, which is good because when you're allowing more hits than innings pitched, I think the number is he's allowed 603 hits in 594 career innings. Well, by comparison, Stephen Brault in his minor league career gave up 100 fewer hits than innings pitched. So there's going to be a lot of base runners, but Dario Agrizal doesn't walk a lot of guys, so he's able to avoid disaster, even if he gives up a good number of hits.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty impressive, Corey, because I did look at those numbers, and he has, 10 walks this year and 74 and a third, and had 13 combined last year at High A and out there in Altoona, 13 and 93-plus innings. So that's pretty good.
Yeah, and there's lots of different pitching philosophies. The Pirates like pitch to contact. Dario Agrizal is in that boat of he's going to throw strikes. And so what happens when you throw strikes? Well, you might give up a lot of hits. But the counter is maybe you won't give up a lot of walks. And so it's just, again, if you want a scouting report on Dario Agrizal, I'd say you got a 50-50 shot because he might be really good tonight. He might be terrible tonight. And that's, again, I know that's kind of the MO for a good number of Pirates pitchers, but that's what I would think going into the game.
I think it's pretty interesting that, Corey, that it comes on the heels. You mentioned Stephen Brault and the performance he had last night, 90 pitches, six shutouts in innings against the Marlins. And over his last five appearances, he's got an earned run average about a 1.8. And do you think this is a kid that's finally finding his way? What do you make of that?
Watching that game on TV last night, he got out of those early inning jams by throwing some phenomenal pitches, Tab. Phenomenal strikes down and away in the strike zone to get some swings and misses, I think on maybe Alfaro, if memory serves me right. Then you can see Elias Diaz motion high for a high pitch with two strikes, and he gets a swinging strikeout to get out of a jam. Stephen Brault knows how to pitch. Stephen Brault doesn't have phenomenal stuff, but he is really, really smart. I would compare Stephen to Zach Duke. I know Zach Duke is 64 years old and still pitching in the big leagues, it seems. And you know what? I think Stephen Brault will be pitching in the big leagues for a long, long time because he's really smart. You can tell he gets some hits. He's a good athlete. And while Stephen Brault may never be a great pitcher, I think he throws left-handed and he'll always be good enough to hang around.
Well, and he had a couple of hits last night and laid down a pretty sacrifice bunt. He can handle the bat. I mean, you mentioned the fact that he's a good athlete, and he really is. I mean, he can help you in other ways, and it's just, you know, I've been unabashedly, you know, rooting for the kid because I had a chance to meet him at Pirate Fest, and he just impressed me. And I told him, I said, look, you're the only lefty that the Pirates can take a look at. Just don't screw it up. That's all you have to do is don't screw it up.
Yeah, and he's got good stuff. And again, when you're really, really smart on the mound, which he is, That's going to make up a little bit for the stuff. He knows how to go through the pitch sequence with hitters. I'm real glad to see Steven having this kind of success because he's been up and down and up and down a little bit. Obviously, the pitcher we saw in the minors was fantastic. And I think maybe now he's just getting that confidence, Tab, that you know how it is. If you go out there and you're confident you can get guys out, most pitchers will tell you that's the first victory you have.
I have to ask you because we did, talk about this, and I know how much, you've been impressed over the years with Tyler Glasnow and what he has been doing since the trade. I brought up this point earlier in the show, and I want to get your real reaction to it. Somebody has got to be on the hot seat in the Pirates organization. Maybe it's Ray Searidge. Maybe it's somebody else in player development. If following the demise of Glasnow up here when he got the call up to the big leagues, if Mitch Keller ends up doing the same thing,
Yeah. That's
a big problem. Big problem.
Yeah, here's the difference between Mitch and Tyler Glasnow that I can tell you right now. Let's give you one pitching difference and one mental difference. Tyler Glasnow has better stuff than Mitch Keller. Okay, that's the bottom line. Tyler Glasnow can do more with the baseball than Mitch Keller can. But at this stage in their development, Tyler Glasnow was kind of a flighty guy. He was fun, kind of goofy, the kind of guy that you could see could lose confidence. He was the kind of guy that when things didn't go his way, he was getting in his head. And look, it's hard to blame anybody with the Pirates because Tyler Glasnow needed to figure it out himself.
Yep.
Mitch Keller, I think, is Mitch Keller compares more favorably to Jameson Taillon. Very intelligent, confident, mature, a mature guy, quiet guy off the field. He's not a goofy kid. He's not somebody that's going to be messing around a lot. So I think Tyler, once he started to slip, now, I do criticize the Pirates for not being more confident in him, but he had to be confident in himself. I think Mitch Keller is going to be able to avoid that pitfall, over the first year or so, because he's going to continue to be more confident in himself, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and we saw, Glasnow breezed all the way through AAA. He didn't find his struggles until he got to the majors. Last year, I think Keller, found a couple of rough spots in trying to find some new pitches at AAA after he, pretty much dominated through Altoona. He struggled a little bit at AAA, and now he's struggling here. If you were to rate your concern at this stage with him right now, between 1 and 10, what would it be? Would it be 5, below 5?
That's a great question. Let me think this through here. I'm going to kind of think about my answer as I talk through it. Mitch Keller gets hit hard sometimes. That would be my concern. Mitch Keller, for as good a stuff as he has, finds too much of the strike zone at times and can really get crushed. Some pitchers, Jameson Taillon might give up some runs and some hits. You never fully feel, though, Tab, like Jameson's just getting pounded out there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Sometimes Mitch Keller will just get pounded, and you're thinking, well, why are these hitters seeing the ball that well? Tyler Glasnow's problem was that he just couldn't throw enough strikes. Once he figured that out, again, his stuff is phenomenal. So if I had to put a number on it, I would say a low number, maybe a 3, because I do have a lot of confidence in Mitch Keller, the person, the mature kid, smart kid, good upbringing, good family. I think a lot of that can come into play that will help him get through any struggles that he might have over the first year to avoid just the complete kind of collapse that Tyler Glasnow had when he was starting for the Pirates a couple years ago.
And I know, Corey, the last time we talked a little bit about Brian Reynolds, but his his continued excellence he won't give it up. It's incredible.
Yeah.
And how much are you surprised by his success? And has he forced the Pirates' hand now and this was another topic that we've talked about the previous hour, into making a decision on their other outfielders, namely Marte and Polanco, and you know they could probably get a haul for Marte at this point.
Hey, Brian Reynolds is legit. If you're not sold on Brian Reynolds right now, you're just not paying attention. Now, look, those are complicated issues about what you do with the rest of the outfield and things like that. But this is, yeah, it's a smaller sample size, but you see everything you need to see from Brian Reynolds. I saw him for 88 games last year coming back from a hammock bone injury. So I didn't get to see the full potential of Brian Williams. He didn't drive the ball as much, you know, as I thought he might. But again, everybody will tell you, when you come back from that hammock bone, it takes a year. So I'm really, really impressed with Brian Reynolds. I think they've got something there that's going to be in Pittsburgh for a long time. Now, who they decide to move, I would tend to agree with you. I know Paul Zeiss wrote a piece the other day in the PG about being sellers. There aren't a lot of guys that they can get people for. Marte might be one of them. But, again, I think those decisions, they're going to have to be considering this stuff over the next 4 weeks or so.
And one of the other guys, you want to talk about getting something for somebody that was brought up a lot this week, and maybe it's brought up on your show in Altoona on ESPN, is, you know, they can get a haul, you would think, for Felipe Vasquez too. But
yeah.
I'm on board as saying you've got a closer who's you know, in your wheelhouse as far as salary is concerned. You got him locked up for a number of years, and he's that good. You don't trade him. Not now, anyway.
I'm going to disagree, because you can find Mike Williams, Jose Mesa, Mark Melancon, all these guys that they've run through the closer role. If you can get three good players for Felipe Vasquez, I would do it. The Pirates aren't winning anything this year. What difference does it make if he's closing out some games, if you're 6, 8, 10, 12 games under .500? Seriously, I know you're looking forward to next year, but I'd rather take the haul, Tad, because I think they can. I think the 2-3 player return, you can find somebody that, while they may not be anywhere near as good as Felipe Vasquez, I do not overvalue the save in baseball. I just don't. I think you can find guys to get three outs in the ninth inning, and if you got a trade piece there, I would pull the trigger on that.
Yeah, it's just based on what we've seen out of this bullpen, it's not as easy as you would think. That's a big.
Yeah,
that's
not,
a big if.
I don't want to downplay that. I'm just saying. So he's going to be saving games the second half of a season with a team that's going nowhere. If you can get something for him, that might be a better play.
All right, let me ask you one quick thing before we cut you loose. Will Craig, they're beginning to move him around in Indianapolis into the outfield, which kind of leads me to believe that, you know, they want to get a look, and because they want to find out if he can play somewhere else with Josh Bell playing as well as he is and hitting as well
yep.
as he is at first. What do you think about that?
I like it. I do like it. Will Craig, he's got power, man. And we all know the Pirates system has just been void of power for a good while, and if they can develop a power bat, first round pick, Will Craig is a big, strong, strapping kid. Won the home run derby in the Eastern League last year. That kid can really drive the ball. He's a good athlete. He can move around the field, so wherever they end up getting him, if you can get him on the field, because he's not going to supplant Josh Bell right now or for several years, so I like that. Hunter Owen, I mentioned him before as well. Tab, he keeps hitting the ball in Altoona. He's got terrific power. I would not be surprised if they start to do some of the same things. You know, he's behind Ke'Bryan Hayes. Nobody's moving Ke'Bryan Hayes. So I could see Hunter Owen playing some other positions as well this year, next year, you know, for them to try to prepare him for the big leagues just to take advantage of some of the power.
Super. Hey, sounds like and happy Father's Day to you, by the way. I could hear the rest of the family back there. So we appreciate you jumping on, Corey. It's always great to talk to you. Thanks so much, buddy. And, again, happy Father's Day with the kids.
Thanks, Dad. Take care, pal.
All righty. There he goes. Corey Geiger from the Altoona Mirror does some great work out there and on ESPN Radio. You could tell he's a radio guy, right? He's just good. I enjoy talking to Corey Geiger. Good little scouting report on Dario Agrizal. It's just a matter of what are you going to get? The good news is he doesn't walk a lot of guys, and for me, that's a big deal. So we'll see how that plays out tonight. We got an update, and then we'll get back to your phone calls. 412-928-9370, Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. I got to tell you, most of the time I totally agree with Corey Geiger from the Altoona Mirror and ESPN Radio, but I totally disagree with any thoughts of moving Felipe Vasquez. Closers like that don't grow on trees, and you know we've seen the Matt Capps and the Mike Williams of the world. Yeah, okay, they may get through, just like we saw Richard Rodriguez last year. You know, wow, oh, this guy's good. And then this year came along, and we found out really who the real Rich Rodriguez is. So when you find a closer and you see yourself as a potential contender, like the Pirates say they do every year, regardless of whether they are or aren't, the bottom line is you got to keep that guy. And just so you know, this is what Felipe Vasquez's contract calls for. He's making $4.5 million this year, $5.75 next year, and only $7.75 2 years beyond this one. So you've got control like that at that, to use the term that the Pirates like to use so much, financial flexibility. You got to hang on to that. And let's remember, he's only 27. Actually soon to be 28 in July. But that's one of the better closers in all of baseball at a beyond reasonable price. I don't move him. So that gets back to the topic of conversation, which, by the way, I'll refresh for you. First of all, we were talking about Steve Brault. And if he continues to pitch like he has over the last five outings, when he's put up an earned run average of 1.85 over the last 24 and a third innings and the six shutout innings last night, he's got to stay in the rotation, which means when everybody's healthy, and that may be a while, so let's temper it a little bit. It may be a while. Trevor Williams will likely be back next week, but it's going to be a lot longer for Jameson Taillon. We might be looking the end of July for that. But, you know, who does Brault replace? And while a lot of people wrote in, and that, of course, we have a poll up. Matty Ice put it up on at 93.7 The Fan, our Twitter handle, which, by the way, is brought to you by Shorkey Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, with locations in North Huntington and the North Hills. The write-in vote for Chris Archer is taking the lead. 41% with Chris Archer being the write-in. Joe Musgrove is at 26%. Jordan Lyles is at 33%. I say Musgrove would be the likely candidate because he's more suited to bullpen work than Archer is, who has never, hardly, I won't say never, hardly ever pitched out of the bullpen. It's not been since his rookie year in 2012 that he actually came out of the bullpen for Tampa Bay in six as a rookie. And, you know, that's what happens oftentimes for a rookie in six appearances. Six appearances. Four of them were starts, and two of them were relief roles. So that would be my choice. So we got that on the table. We also have on the table your top three in your mind. Rank them, movable pieces for the Pirates based on value in return, based on replacing pieces for this club coming up to the trade deadline. And a lot of it is going to be based on where they are, based on, you know, are they going to be 10, 12 games under 500? Are they going to be right at 500? Can they climb in this stretch, by the way? And they do have a nice little stretch here with these three games against the Marlins and then coming home to face Detroit for a couple of games and then San Diego for next weekend before hitting the road to Houston and Milwaukee and the Cubs in Milwaukee. That's the killer stretch. So now is the time to make hay and get to 500, or at least close to 500, over the next stretch. If you win, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Okay, you got 8 games. Marlins, Detroit, and San Diego. If you win 7 of the next 8, that obviously puts you right back at 500, right? Okay, because they're 6 under now, so they go 7 and 1. Yeah, that makes sense. So they're at 500 heading into that series, and that's going to be the next 2 weeks before the All-Star break. Playing the Astros, Milwaukee. They're going to face Milwaukee 6 times, the Cubs 4, and Houston 3. So that's the killer run. That's going to determine, you know, what likely pieces will be moved at the end of July. But I'm not. My ranking is as follows: Marte, Polanco, Cabrera. What are yours? 412-928-9370, which is also the Edgar Snyder & Associates fan text line. Edgar Snyder & Associates reminds you to text responsibly. Had Joe on the line earlier, but we had to go to Corey Geiger. Now we got Joe back from Cranberry. Thanks for calling back, Joe. Happy Father's Day to you, by the way.
Tad, always good to talk to you. Always good to hear you. Hey, you know what? Because I agree now that Vasquez is probably want to hang on to him just because of the money situation. But other than that, and by the way, have you seen Shane Baz's numbers lately?
Yeah, well, he's been pretty good, but he hasn't been good up until this point. Now, you know, we'll see. I mean, he's in low A, so yeah, he's got a long way to go. Long way to go.
That's right. And, you know, I've always liked Brault also. The difference, he's throwing the ball over the plate. He's not walking guys. That's so critical for him.
That's what I said. The biggest deal in last night's, you know, shutout 6 innings was 0 walks.
Absolutely. He has good stuff. He's hard to hit when he gets ahead of hitters. But regarding the trade prospects, I don't think there's a whole lot of things they can do unless a contender loses someone and needs an outfielder. Then Starling Marte could fetch you something. I don't think Polanco would fetch that much.
Well, with Polanco, what you'd probably have to do is move him to an American League team where he can DH. You know, it's funny we're saying that because last year when Josh Bell was struggling both defensively and at the plate. That's what everybody was talking about. Oh, you got to trade Josh Bell to somebody in the American League where he could DH. Now he's gotten capable at first base, and look what he's doing with a bat. So nobody's talking about that anymore.
He has improved his defense a lot, and he's improved his throwing some. He needs to continue to improve his throwing.
Yeah.
He can be able to throw that ball around the infield like a bullet, man. He can cut off guys at the plate. He can do a lot with his arm out there at first base if he gets his act together throwing the ball.
Yeah, I don't know what the deal is with that. I watched him kind of put one over to second base. I just don't get it. They ought to just take him aside, and I'm sure they have, and just let him throw bullets, like you say. I mean, come on, reach back. He's not reaching back. He's shot putting it from his shoulder forward.
It's a confidence thing. You're exactly right. Reach back, fire that thing, step out and get a throwing lane if you need to, and he can do a whole lot with his arm.
You know what? I'd rather see him, you know, making that throw to second base, drill a guy in the back really hard than kind of throw the loop-de-loop. You know? That's just me. Hey, Joe, thanks for calling back. It's always good to hear from you. We got an update coming up, and then more of your calls, 412-928-9370. We're going to get to a little hockey next hour. That should be fun. Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. Tab Douglas here. Happy to have you on board. We're taking you right up to 445 and the Nesco Roofing Preview Show, getting you ready for today's game. Hopefully the Bucks can make it 2 in a row over the Marlins. Take advantage of this while you can. Marlins are a bad baseball team. By the way, I did notice this. A lot of people have been talking about run differential for the Bucks, and it was until last night's 11-0 win, it was minus 88, which I believe was second worst in the National League. But by winning 11-0 over the Marlins last night, dropping their run differential to minus 77, the Marlins are minus 76, I believe. So with a victory over the Marlins of some degree, they can pass them and improve on that run differential. Anyway, I'm looking at the Twitter poll, which Matt Harkins threw out there regarding Stephen Brault. And a lot of people don't have faith. And I'm looking at some people. Tony Elitch says, or Troy Elitch says, he sucks. He had two good games. He's a less talented Jeff Locke. First of all, it's not two good games. It essentially amounts to four quality starts. We're talking 24 and a third innings with a 1.85 earned run average. So it's more than that. And, you know, granted, it was the Miami Marlins he was pitching against last night. And granted, he needs to continue pitching this well to take a spot in the rotation over somebody else. But, you know, he's heading the right direction. So a lot of people don't think that this will continue. Moot point because he won't continue pitching like this. Georgia Rush says that on Twitter. So there are a lot of people that, you know, basically don't have a whole lot of faith that Brault can continue this. I think it's a wait and see thing. I'm hoping that he does, because I've always felt that having a left-hander in this rotation would be of great benefit to the Pirates. And I've been waiting for it when it comes to Stephen Brault the last couple of years. So I'm happy that he's strung together five appearances. That's five appearances now, two starts, the last two, that are looking pretty good. Coming up in the next hour at 3:05, we're going to get into some hockey, because the draft is coming up next Friday night. Penguins have a first-round pick. What are they going to do with it? Are they going to get another first-round pick higher in the draft? Maybe they'll have two, and they're not picking in the second round. They're not picking in the third round either. Are they going to trade somebody to fill those holes? A lot can happen at the draft. What can happen from a prospect side? What could be available for the Penguins if they don't end up moving up in the draft? What can they get at 21? Kyle Woodley from the Red Line Report will join us. And then after that, we're going to talk to Jonathan Bomboli of the Trib. I'm sure he's got his ear to the ground as to what's happening with Phil Kessel and other potential moves. The Penguins have to make moves to create some cap space. There's no doubt about that. Whether it's Kessel, whether it's Letang, I don't think it's going to be Malkin, and it certainly won't be Sid, so you can forget about all that. But we'll talk to him next hour as well.